Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Uberman, you were on previously. Mr. Hill, are you on now?
Yes, I am.
All right. And I don't know how early you had come on the line, but just so that you are aware, we have Judge Petty, Judge McCullough, and myself, Judge Huff, hearing the case this morning. And we appreciate everyone making this mutual accommodation because of the weather. So, Mr. Hill, whenever you are ready, we're ready to hear you. And do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
May it please the court, my name is Melvin Hill, and I represent Mr. Hutton, and I represented Mr. Hutton in the trial court below. The facts are that James Kern, who knew Mr. Hutton, he allowed him to work in his house, and Mr. Hutton was dating Mr. Kern's sister, Betty Kearns, and James Kearns had allowed and offered for Mr. Hutton and Ms. Kearns to work at his home. Sometime, I'm not sure the record is quite clear exactly when it happened, but at some point, Mr. Kearns gave Mr. Hutton and Ms. Kearns the keys to his vehicle to go to, I believe, Lowe's to get some building materials to do some work around his home. At that time, when they returned with the keys, and the next day, I believe, Mr. Kearns noticed that his house key was missing. He went looking around his house to see if anything was missing and determined that his wife's jewelry was missing. His wife had passed away earlier. He had, according to the record, not seen the jewelry since for about 6 months prior to him noticing that the jewelry was missing. He contacted the Roanoke County Police Department and Officer Morris of that department, and when he testified at the trial, he was Special Agent Morris with the Virginia ABC Board, that he contacted the police. Officer Morris then did a search of the local pawn shops to determine if the jewelry had been pawned. He did determine it had been pawned and had been pawned by my client, David Hutton. At some point, I believe around October 12th, Mr. Officer Morris interviewed Mr. Hutton in the Roanoke County Jail. Hutton was advised of his rights pursuant to the Miranda decision and gave a statement. And in that statement, Mr. Hutton admitted to pawning the jewelry, but denied that he had stolen the jewelry, and said, of course, he'd been in the house, and he was given the jewelry by Betty Kearns, who was James Kearns' sister. Now, those are essentially the facts that give rise to the appeal, and upon those facts, Judge Swanson, the Roanoke County Circuit Court, convicted Mr. Hutton of receiving stolen goods. As the court is aware, this court is aware, the Commonwealth has to establish on the charge of receiving stolen goods that Mr. Hutton knew that the goods, in this case the jewelry, had been stolen. It is our position, Mr. Hutton's position, that there's simply no evidence from which a court, a trier of facts, could infer that Mr. Hutton knew that the jewelry was stolen. I point out certain facts that is contained in the record to support my contention and support Mr. Hutton's contention that he was given the jewelry by Betty Kearns. Number one, Betty Kearns was James Kearns' sister. It's reasonable to infer that she'd been in the house before and knew perhaps that is her sister would have been her sister-in-law had some jewelry. And if you look at page on the appendix 86, James Kearns testifies that his sister had come in and cleaned. I think it's line 11. She did different things all through the house. I'd also point out on page 87, in response to a question from the Commonwealth attorney, that Mr. Kearns had testified, and they used, and it's very important, I think, that they, and he used the plural, went to Lowe's when he's given the keys to the truck, which later turned out the key to his house was missing. He came back, and when they left, I went in about my day. He uses they, so it's, again, clear from the evidence that Betty Kearns and David Hutton both had an opportunity, if the court wants to believe that someone stole the keys and then used that key to go in the house and steal the jewelry, it's reasonable to infer that Betty Kearns is the one who accomplished the theft and gave the goods to Mr. Hutton. And the record is absolutely silent on whether or not Ms. Kearns advised David Hutton
from your client's perspective why he was given $800 worth of jewelry by this woman?
No, it's not. The record is clear. My client did not testify, and the evidence that he given the jewelry by his Kearns comes from his statement to Officer Morris.
I'm sorry, statement. But it's a little contrary to human experience that people just give away $800 worth of jewelry. So wouldn't that be a circumstance the trial court could consider?
I would think not, in the sense that it's, while the court can make certain inferences, those must be inferences from the proved facts. And the only proved fact that we have in terms of his knowledge is his statement. And while it may be unusual, it may or may not be unusual, because we don't know the nature of the relationship between Mr. Hutton and Ms. Kearns, and we don't know whether they've done this kind of thing before. And I'd also point out, Mr. Hutton did not try to conceal the fact that he did call the jury, which is a fact I would ask the court to consider in finding that he did not and could not have called. The Commonwealth put it differently. The Commonwealth failed to prove that he knew that the items were stolen. While it may be contrary to human nature, but when you're weighing all of the evidence and the inferences from the facts, I don't believe that that factor is sufficient to determine that Mr. Hutton knew the items were stolen. I'd also point out that other than the fact that Mrs. Kearns had more access to the home that Mr. Hutton would have had, that she is the sister of the defendant. And I also point out, as I did, that Mr. Hutton did not conceal the fact. He didn't, when he went to the pawn shop, the evidence appears to be that he used his own name and information. And when approached and talked and interviewed by Officer Morris, he readily admitted that he did, in fact, pawn the items. Additionally, most of the cases, I believe, cited by the Attorney General talk about two important factors that the court has to consider. Number one is whether it's a recent exclusive possession of stolen property, and whether or not the court had the opportunity or the right trial court not to consider or to Mr. Hutton's statement or to believe that his statement is untruthful. And most of the cases that I read, the defendant actually testified, took the stand and said, you know, I did not know the items were stolen. And the Court of Appeals and the Virginia Supreme Court, in deciding in some of those cases, ruled that the trial court had an opportunity to view the defendant and weigh his testimony. While he is not required to testify, if in fact he testified, the court has the right to consider that and weigh that testimony along with other testimony. And this case is different in the fact that Mr. Hutton did not testify. So you have, in the Commonwealth evidence, I did not know the items were stolen. So I am not sure the same sort of analysis applies, and I would argue that the only evidence, again, that Mr. Hutton on his issue of knowledge comes from him. And the recency of the possession, the evidence is that Mr. Kearns had not noticed him or his testimony whether or not the jewel was there 6 months prior to when he reported the theft. So there's no evidence as to when the actual theft occurred, so I would argue that the rule of law states that a court can infer that someone stole a particular item by his or her recent possession of that stolen property. And a lot of the cases deal with an unexplained explanation for the possession of that stolen property, where in this case you have, in fact, an explanation for the recent possession of the property. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Hearing none, you wish to reserve the balance of your time then, sir?
Yes, I would.
For 6 minutes?
Yes.
All right. And Mr. Huberman?
May it please the court, my name is David Huberman, and I represent the Commonwealth. The evidence in this case was sufficient to support Mr. Hutton's conviction for receiving stolen property. On appeal, or at least on brief, Mr. Hutton incorrectly speculates that the trial judge assumed without evidence that both he and Mr. Kearns' sister conspired to steal the jewelry. That was not the case, nor was that the crime with which Mr. Hutton was charged. Receiving stolen property is set forth in Code Section 18.2-108A, and it's phrased in the disjunctive. It's any person who buys or receives or aids in concealing property, knowing that it was somehow stolen. And when the evidence demonstrates the concealment of that property, the Commonwealth does not have to prove that the accused was actually the thief or that he received the property from the thief. Rather, the unexplained possession of recently stolen goods raises that inference. And to convict a defendant under this code section, there are four elements that are required. We're really only talking about the last two here today. Those four elements are that the property was first previously stolen by another, second, received by the defendant. I don't think there's any argument here with respect to either of those two elements, but what we're really talking about are the latter two, and that's with knowledge of the theft and a dishonest intent. And those two elements have sort of combined into a guilty knowledge element. And in Bazemore versus Commonwealth, this court held that guilty knowledge is demonstrated if the circumstances proven are such as must have made or caused the recipient of the stolen goods to believe that they were stolen. And as is often the case, in the absence of a confession or some statement against interest, the Commonwealth's case is going to be based naturally upon circumstantial evidence, and that's okay. There's overwhelming circumstantial evidence in this case that demonstrated Mr. Hutton knew the jewelry was stolen. First and foremost, the evidence proved that Mr. Hutton pawned the jewelry no more than 5 weeks from the date on which Kearns had reported it stolen. And I'm using that time as the best case scenario for Mr. Hutton, because the record, that is the trial transcript, only demonstrates that this this day where both Mr. Hutton and Betty Kearns came to do some work at Mr. Kearns' house was sometime in August of 2012. So assuming the date of August 1st, 2012, about 5 weeks passed until Mr. Hutton sold the first piece of stolen jewelry to the Williamson Road pawn shop on September 7th, 2012. And I think it's clear from the Supreme Court's precedents that a period of 5 weeks falls within recency, within statute, or rather Code Section 18.2-108, and several cases were cited on brief that dealt with 4 weeks, 2.5 months, and 3 months, all following or all being contained within that recency provision. Kearns also testified, and I think it's significant, that he noticed his house key was missing the day after he gave his key ring to Hutton or to Hutton and Kearns. I don't think it makes any difference in this case because Mr. Hutton was charged with receiving stolen property, not actually stealing it, or burglary, or grand larceny, or any of those things. But I think Mr. Kearns rightly so testified that he felt uneasy as a result of noticing his key was missing, and that led him to discover the missing jewelry. And there was certainly time for either Mr. Hutton and Ms. Kearns or one or the other to come to the house and take the jewelry, because on page 87 of the appendix, Mr. Kern says, when I came in to unlock my door after work, so presumably he had been gone for at least a period of time during which the theft could have occurred. And I think given those circumstances, the fact finder was permitted to infer that Hutton or Kearns, Betty Kearns that is, took Mr. Kern's house key to access and steal the jewelry. And Mr. Hutton's exclusive possession within the 5 weeks of the theft was sufficient to establish a prima facie case that he knew the jewelry was stolen. The burden at that point would shift to Mr. Hutton, and while Mr. Hill and I disagree on this point, I don't think Mr. Hutton established or rebutted that presumption at trial. The trier of fact, in this case it was a judge, not a jury, has no obligation to accept an account that it finds unworthy of belief, and in this case, the police officer, or at least the gentleman was a police officer at the time when he investigated the incident, testified that Mr. Hutton claimed he was unaware of where the jewelry came from and he didn't know that it was stolen. But the trial court was not limited to only considering that testimony. Hutton was unemployed at the time of the theft, as was his girlfriend, Betty Kearns. They both had access to the location in James Kearns' house where the jewelry was stored. And I think it's pretty telling that Mr. Hutton never questioned how his similarly unemployed girlfriend obtained $800 worth of jewelry, including a man's wedding band, which he in turn sold to a pawn shop. And the fact that Kearns discovered, James Kearns discovered the jewelry was missing shortly after the house key went missing is also indicative of Hutton's guilt. Now taken individually, each pieces of evidence in this case may not be much when viewed in isolation, but as this court knows, and as it's cited in Emerson versus Commonwealth, while no single piece of evidence may be sufficient, the combined force of many concurrent and related circumstances, each by themselves insufficient, may lead a reasonable mind irresistibly to a conclusion. And in this case, I think, especially given the standard of review, which is highly favorable to the Commonwealth at this stage, Hutton cannot demonstrate that no rational trier of fact could have found the evidence was insufficient to support his conviction. And therefore, I do believe the trial court acted properly when it found the evidence was, in the trial court's own words, more than sufficient, unquote, to support the conviction. Therefore, I respectfully request that you affirm the judgment of the Circuit Court for Roanoke County, and unless there are any questions, which I'm happy to respond to, I'll rest on the remainder of the argument as set forth on brief.
Very well. Hearing no questions, we'll move on to the rebuttal. Mr. Hill?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Huberman argues that there was the unexplained recent possession of stolen property, and it's not unexplained. It is explained by Mr. Hutton's statement. It seems to me that one of the cornerstones of the Commonwealth argument is the fact that it's a recent possession, and Mr. Hutton was pawning the jewelry roughly 5 weeks from the day it was reported stolen. And again, I'd like to emphasize, if you look clearly at the record, there is no indication as to when the jewelry was stolen. Mr. Kearns testified that he noticed the jewelry there 6 months prior to when he reported it stolen. There is no evidence whatsoever of when this jewelry was stolen. So you cannot, in my view, argue that this jewelry was stolen on August of 2012, meaning when the keys were given, stolen then, and less than 6 weeks later, Mr. Hutton was pawning this jewelry that was, in fact, stolen. Another cornerstone of Thomas' argument is, we don't have to establish, obviously, that Mr. Hutton actually broke in or stole the jewelry. But that will require Mr. Hutton and Ms. Kearns to be acting in concert. Once again, looking at the record, there's absolutely no evidence of that at all. None. Where is the evidence that shows that either that Ms. Kearns stole it and working in concert with Mr. Hutton, gave Mr. Hutton the jewelry and advised him, oh, by the way, I stole it, and therefore Mr. Hutton is the one who pawned the jewelry. Again, if you're looking at inferences and from the proved facts, the inferences that one can draw that are also reasonable, and the Commonwealth cannot exclude that reasonable hypothesis of innocence, is that Betty Kearns, who was the sister-in-law of the owner of most of the jewelry, who had been in the house, who had cleaned, according to James Kearns, all throughout the house during this period of time as well, and who was more likely to know that this jewelry was in the house? Betty Kearns. It was in a closet. And I believe Mr. Kearns' bedroom. So the jewelry box was in the closet in a room in which Betty Kearns, who had obviously been in the house before, knew the jewelry was there. I think it's a reasonable inference, knew the jewelry was in the house and had an opportunity to take the jewelry. The issue then becomes, did the defendant know, David Hutton know, that this jewelry was in fact stolen? And again, we point out his statement, which is clear and unambiguous, it's not equivocal. I did not know this item was stolen. I did work at that house. I was paid for doing work at that house. I never broke into that house. I never stole any jewelry. And again, I'd like to emphasize and ask the court to view this differently than a case in which the defendant actually testified. Mr. Hutton didn't actually testify. So the Commonwealth's evidence is, and if you have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth and give the Commonwealth any reasonable inferences from that evidence, it is the Commonwealth evidence that Mr. Hutton did not know that the jewelry was stolen. I'd ask the court to, when looking at the record and deciding the case, to pay particular attention to the fact that there is an explanation for the reason for the possession. I would not necessarily concur or agree that it's recent, and the fact that we don't know when this jewelry was stolen, and the fact that the evidence was presented in the Commonwealth case in chief that Mr. Hutton did not know these items were stolen, and I'd ask you to reverse the decision.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hill and Mr. Uberman. The case is now submitted, and that concludes the docket for this morning.